Good afternoon, and good afternoon. Thank you for joining me on another episode of Ask Sharifa Videocast and Podcast. I have a very special guest for today's show. I met this lovely young lady on an episode of the Roundtable Talk Show, and based on her story, I immediately was like, I have to talk to her a little bit more. We're bringing her back to the Roundtable. I was a guest on her show, but she is just so amazing, and we're going to talk about this incredible book, Love is Worth Waiting For, which I can't wait to get into. But first, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Ms. DM Nita. She has been creating stories since she was a kid. She started committing them to paper when she was in high school, starting off as a bassist and television model during her first foray into college. And she soon discovered her preferred form of education was working in the music and film industries. So we're going to talk about everything she has going on. Good morning.
Good Donna, morning. How are you? I'm okay. Good afternoon. How are you? It's afternoon. It's morning. It's morning somewhere.
I am great, but I'm so excited. I'm so excited to have you on the show. But for anyone who hasn't had, who missed you on the Roundtables Talk Show, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? What do you do?
My name is Donna. I go by the pen name of DM Needham. I am host of the Better Two podcast and the Better Two Intuitive Weekly, which is a reading podcast. Basically, I do intuitive tarot readings on the podcast there. But the Better Two podcast basically will take a guest to a moment in their life and they can reflect back on it. But usually it ends up turning into more of a coffee shop conversation. And a lot of people that have listened to it have said that they have benefited from the information they've received because it's helped make changes in their life. But one of my true passions is writing. I've been writing since high school. And as you said in my bio, I did start committing stories because I was a child of divorce, and some ways to deal with trauma and everything was to dive into my imagination. So I allowed myself to start creating things, and that's just kind of grown from there. So while I dabbled in music and modeling and acting and working in production and even being a disc jockey, on-air personality, because now if you say disc jockey, people think I'm spinning tunes, which I was, but not in the sense that some think. So I just decided that after a certain point, this was what I wanted to do. You know, I've been a caregiver to my husband and my ex stepdaughters. So it's like I've had a very diverse life. So
absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm excited about the book. So let me just ask some questions prior to diving into the book. On your podcast, what motivated you to start your Better Two podcast?
The Better Two podcast came about because I was a guest on somebody's podcast last year around this time. While I had the background in radio and I had wanted to do a podcast with my husband because I knew he was on borrowed time, we never got to it. And I kept having friends tell me, you have the background, do it. You need to be, you know, this, you have the voice for it, you should do it. And so after last year, when I did this guy's podcast, which he hosted a podcast for 365 days, and that was it. And it was about fear. So he talked to one person a day about their fear. And my fear was about losing my husband. And at that point, I had already had that experience. But it made me go back to when we first got together. And that was all about me saying that it was better to love him and lose him than never to have loved him at all. And so I got to thinking after I did the podcast that, you know, Better Two, everybody's got a Better Two moment. Everybody's got a moment where they can look back. And somebody told me, well, I don't want to look back and regret. It's not that you're regretting. It's about looking back at the knowledge that you gained, about the experience that you gained and how you transformed your life. Because whether it was good or bad, you still learned something from that experience. So I started Googling Better Two. And when I got to 6 pages of Better Two reasoning, and they were still a lot more. And it was from, you know, some were serious, like, you know, it was better to love. And then there was some like it was better to stay at home than be a hoe. You know, I mean, it was just like, okay.
I agree with that, though. I second that. It's better to be at home than to be at home. So we don't go.
But I mean, it was just really, some of the stuff was really mundane, and it was like, okay, so everybody can relate to this. Mm-hmm. So what the intention was when I started was to take you to that moment and just focus on that moment in the person's life. And now it's kind of morphed into a conversation about what's also going on in the world and how those life lessons apply.
Absolutely. So what motivates you to do the intuitive podcast?
I've been doing intuitive readings for about 28 years, and I used to do before pre-pandemic, and about 2 years before that, I used to have a YouTube channel that belonged with my shop called Kitty Mystic, and I used to do a weekly reading, and I got out of it, much to a couple of people's chagrin. I got out of doing that because it was on YouTube all the time. So this time I was like, you know, I keep getting asked about doing readings, so I might as well put myself back out there. And I decided, well, I already have the Better Two. So why not better? You know, if it's a template of what you might expect during the week, wouldn't it be better to just go ahead with the branding that I have? Because after all, my books are the Better Two Burnout series. I did not do this intentionally. It just kind of all came together.
So. Wow. So you have one podcast which you focus on Better Two, and then you have another podcast where you provide intuitive readings, which helps people with some of the decisions that they make. So maybe they don't have to go through that hard process of learning what is better to or not to, to do, and just kind of get some advice and some guidance. Do you ever have a issue with combining them? Because so often as spiritual healers, as spiritual people, we always seem, or some people seem to have a conflict between one world and the other. Have you found that to be the case?
Yes. For a long time, I have a friend who's a reader, and she has been one of the ones that has been hardcore pressed to tell me to get myself back in there. Because when I released my book, my first book, which isn't that book, My Days with the Dark Muse was my first book, I kind of stepped away because it's like, okay, you have to decide whether you're going to brand yourself as an author, because people will look at you doing the spiritual aspect of things and might be turned off and they won't want to read your book. So right. It's about me owning myself. And one of my long-term friends that I've known for like 30 years, she just looked at me and she goes, why is it when you talk about readings, you do it through gritted teeth? She's like, you're a very talented reader, but yet it's like because there's a stigma to it. And even though we've embraced it more, there was still a stigma to it. So finally, last month, I just kind of said, you know what? Own yourself. Just own it all. And I mean, the weekly intuitive podcast, it's more of a generalized reading. It's not something that is tailored. I mean, I do offer tailored readings. But like this week, you know, it's about being the observer instead of, you know, going in there to a Christmas function and getting into a heated political debate. It's about observing, because sometimes if you observe somebody, you can see where maybe a part of your personality traits came from, and you can unpack that and really take it the next week or so and look at it and start saying, okay, I don't want to be like that person. They raised me, but I don't want to be like that. So there's things and nuances I usually put in the weekly that, while it's general, it kind of gives you an overlay of what's coming up.
One of the things that stood out to me was your strength. And when I was speaking with you and your story and how you were able to share your experience with losing your husband, your experiences during life, and just smile and be happy and offer guidance to other people. And one of the things that I always say when people say to me, Sharifa, you're strong, you're so strong, I'm like, okay, but what were my choices? What were my options? You know, what else could I have done? It wasn't like somebody gave me a plan B and I'm like, no, I'll take the difficult life. Like, how do you respond, or how do you feel, or do you often hear people say, you're strong, Donna, you've had these experiences?
I've had a lot of people tell me, you're strong, I can't believe you went through all that. And one thing that you said that actually kind of amuses me, because when I ended my first marriage, I went to a therapist again. And I have been in and out of therapy for a long time, and that does not make me insane. It makes me able to cope with things better. So that's kind of how I cope with some of it. But I remember talking to my therapist, and she's like, you're sitting here telling me something you're angry about, yet you're smiling. Mm-hmm. And she's like, how do you do this? This is, you're sending out mixed signals. But the fact of the matter is, it's how we're taught to be in person. Nobody wants to see you smile, or not smile, but nobody wants to see you sad. Nobody wants to see you angry. They want to see a smile on your face. You're supposed to be a pretty girl. You're supposed to sit down and shut up and look good. And that's it. And so I think I've kind of worn that mask along the lines. And even the last year, and I will say this, when it came to the year anniversary of my husband passing, I had two podcasts record that day. And I remember being on the podcast laughing and joking. And I actually took a picture, and I think I posted on Instagram, of me crying. Oh, I took a picture of me being totally like this and then crying. So I think I've gotten very good at masking my emotions. And I think that's why I can understand people that sit there and say, well, they look so happy. I mean, everybody that knew my mom before she killed herself thought my mom was excited about my wedding. I knew the truth. My grandmother knew the truth. But everybody that was around her didn't. And we were out of state, my grandmother and I.
So. Oh, wow. Your mother, that just more strength. Your mother killed herself prior to your wedding?
Yeah, well, we ended up postponing the wedding, but yeah. But that wasn't the first time. I mean, she had tried to kill herself when I was in high school, and she had also tried to do it when I was about 9 or 10 years old. So my mom had had a lot of problems, but she, you know, back then you didn't diagnose things. You mm-hmm. didn't, you know, she got away. She went to a mental hospital for 72 hours psych hold after 3 days in a coma. And wow. She convinced them that she was burned out.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, where does the mind go for my stories? This is why I can write, because I take some of those people that I've encountered and some of the experiences and throw them into the mix of a story. Because people will sit there and say, well, that can't be true. Something like that wouldn't happen. Oh, fact is much stranger than fiction.
Wow. But again, you know, this is such a powerful subject. And yet there's laughter, there's enjoyment, there's, because it feels to me, and it's just a feeling that you released a lot of that pain, you released a lot of that hurt. And also sometimes when we have certain feelings, sometimes we laugh to keep from crying. Have you found that to be your experience?
Yes, on both. I mean, my mom's been dead 30 years this year, last month. And there's times when I'm still angry at her. There's times when I'm okay with her, and I've released a lot of it because it's like, I can look back now and say she had her problems. She mm-hmm. She was willing to put me in therapy when I was a kid, when they got divorced, but she wasn't willing to get her own help because back then it goes back to that stigma. I find laughter because sometimes you have to laugh, otherwise you're going to cry, and you have to find humor in it. You know, going through somebody, and this is something that I guess maybe because I had my mom and because of my situation with being a parent to two kids that I ended up having to give up, I understand that great loss. So when it came to my husband, knowing my husband's on borrowed time, I had to keep going. I had to keep focusing. I didn't know if I'd wake up one day and he'd be dead in the bed next to me. That was always a thought. And the thing is, and this goes back to something you said prior about the fact that you're a strong person. It wasn't until after he died that my doctor tells me, my primary care doctor says, do you realize the stress and anxiety you've been under for like the last 5 to 7 years? And I'm like, no, what are you talking about? But the truth is, when you come from trauma, as you know, you learn to deal with it. You learn to go through it because this is your life. You don't know anything else. So how are you going to sit there and say, well, I can't do that? Because this is your life. This is your experience. So you learn to navigate it.
Yes. Yes. I remember telling someone that same thing about, you know, I didn't have choices or I didn't have options. And what she said to me was like, you did have choices and options in that sometimes people would have turned to drugs. They would have turned to alcohol. They would have turned to, you know, sexual promiscuity. They would turn to so many different things. So the choice is in not doing those things and just coping and living life as you are. And I was like, that's a very interesting point. So for you, did you have those moments where you felt like, okay, I can just let me numb myself, numb my mind. I just want to forget all about that. Or you just, you know, went through this whole process by yourself, as yourself.
Alcohol was never an option because I watched my dad drink. My dad went from being perfectly, when I was little, before their divorce, my dad was a quintessential family man. My world looked perfect. I mean, my dad was a fireman, which, you know, now looking back, when I unpack things, he watched people burn. I mean, this is going to affect you. So my dad was a fireman. He had a nice import mechanic business. So I got to ride in Ferraris, Rolls-Royces. I got some high dollar experience there. I was a spoiled brat. I had my own playroom. I had my own bedroom. I was a great kid. My life was perfect.
Yes.
I was in private school. And then all of a sudden I went to having dad not always show up. I watched their last fight. Dad was drunk a lot of the times when he did show up. I was sleeping on my grandmother's couch. All my toys were packed. And I'm not saying cry me a river. I'm not saying anything, because in a way, all of this was a blessing because it made me have to change my perception of a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And in fifth grade, after a flood, the next year in sixth grade, besides, you know, now I'm not living with my grandmother or my mom or my dad. I'm living with my former fifth grade teacher, who's a disciplinarian.
Wow.
So,
and you wrote fiction? Like, I'm trying to understand why there isn't some memoir or some biography or a movie about your life.
Because I never find myself that fascinating. I mean, it's like my husband used to get after me because I used to hang out with bands. And he's like, you really need to write all this down. And I'm like, no, I don't. And he's like, yeah, you do. He's like, you've had a crazy life. You've moved all these places. You've done so many things. I'm envious of you. And I'm just like, nobody was going to find me that fascinating. I don't find me that fascinating. It was my life. You know, I just, so back to your question, though, because I kind of side-skirted it. So looking at my dad drinking, and then my dad's just say no talk was, don't do it. You know, he didn't tell me this until years later, but he had a Percocet addiction at one point. But he's like, I've tried all the drugs, don't do them. My mom, on the other hand, would overeat. So I kind of learned that behavior from her. If I got too stressed, give me a pint of Chubby Hubby from Ben and Jerry's and I was good to go. She would eat a custard pie a day, but ice cream was my jam. And the fact of the matter is that's how I kind of numb things. And that was only briefly. My true escape, especially in high school, that's where the pen to paper started, because one of my friends was writing and it was like, I was so upset because I transferred schools in the middle of my high school career. I went from an all-girl private school to suddenly being in a public school with boys, makeup, and all the other stuff, and wearing my mom's hand-me-downs. So wow. It was kind of like, I got picked on. I had acne. I had braces. I didn't fit in. I came from New Orleans, where I sound like I'm from New York, to this place where everybody's sounding country twang, and I don't fit in. And on top of it, I have to lie because my mother used a false address for my last 2 years in school because she said the school was bad. I'm not even going to go what that means. It ticks me off that she did that. But at the time, what are you going to do? You're 16 years old. So I was working at McDonald's there and the kids would come in, but I didn't have really any friends around school. So it was always something so weird. So the way I dealt with things was I wrote. I picked up the bass. I started jumping into a fantasy world to make my life better. I mean, when you come home from school crying and you look at your mom and you knock on her door because the bedroom door is closed and you're like, Mom, can I talk to you? Because you've had the worst day in the world. And she goes, I have my own problems. I don't want to deal with you. And slams the door in your face.
Oh, wow. Oh, I just almost want to just give you a hug. Like, that is horrible that you had that experience.
But that was life. And it's the same thing with, you know, there was a time when I read something and, you know, I had my moments of dark thoughts. I wrote something about, I was 19 or 20 and I was laying on my bedroom floor and I wrote something about how everybody killed me, yet nobody did. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't that I was going to die or anything, but I wrote this. It was about my pain. And I started to read it to my mom and she looked at me and she goes, stop. And I'm like, why? She goes, I don't want to know what pain you're in.
Wow. Oh.
But this is the same woman who sent me to a mental institution to get evaluated. And the mental institution came back and told me, you're creative. Your mother's not. She's going to kill you if you don't get out of there.
Oh, wow. Well, that's something they usually don't give you that kind of advice.
Always
try to, you know, make warm everything over that everything is going to be all right. They're like, your mom's going to kill you, literally kill you if you don't get out of there. So what did you do?
I was there for about another 6 months I went back home firstly because she kept telling me I was crazy. I had a black velvet coat on. I had hot pants. I had high heels. I was rocking the glamour girl thing because I was in a band. And I came home and I tell my mom that they told me that I was creative and she wasn't, and she didn't understand me and that I was perfectly sane. And she just looked at me and she said, they're wrong. Okay. So my mother and I never, it was always a competition with her. So it was kind of like, okay, I lived there. I moved. And I mean, we had our times.
I can relate because growing up, you know, from my family, I was always told I was dramatic and I was emotional. Those are the two things. And they always made it sound like it was the worst thing ever to be. You know, you're dramatic, you're emotional. And now I just see it different. Like, I enjoy being dramatic. I enjoy having fun. I enjoy the fact that I'm emotional, you know, because what's the opposite of emotional? code? I mean, what is it? You know, so it's like, so I can definitely relate when you're in a household when people have conflicting views and to have it from a parent. So, but you did what not a lot of people or not many people can do is you channel that into creativity. You channel that into writing. You channel that into music. You channel that into being an artist. Even now, you know, you have so much personality that I can bet you dollars to donuts. So many people wish they have. You're still alive. You're still kicking. You're still smiling. And I think that's a credit to just you and your spirit.
Thank you. It's not easy because, I mean, there are a lot of times where I feel socially awkward. Honestly, I feel socially awkward, and that I try to play it, to keep it together and handle situations. But especially after the pandemic now, it's like I've been isolated for a long time, but it's socially awkward because I'm not sure if I say the right thing or if I say too much. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure on when I do these things, I overshare, but it's kind of like I'm 54. And if somebody can learn from what I've gone through, then, you know, hey, if it helps somebody, that's all that matters.
But I think I was a lot more socially awkward probably years ago than I am now. I just got to a point of acceptance and just accepting this is who I am. You know, sometimes I talk too much, overshare, but I'm just okay with that. Like you said, at 54, you're like, this is who I am. Was there a defining moment in your life where you just like, well, I'm okay with who I am?
There's been many defining moments like that. And then this is what I've talked about to several people. It's like, there are moments where you will own yourself. You will feel proud of who you are. You know, you have it. You're, dare I say, you know, the BA, you're the badass. But the fact of the matter is, then something will happen and it will trigger you and it will take you down to being that kid again that's uncertain and you don't know how to act. You know, it's funny because I said something to somebody the other day, because when you were on my show, you were giving me such praise, and it's so awkward to hear praise. And, you know, it's like, maybe I don't see what other people see, because, and I think that's true for all of us. I think we listen to that negative chatter that was in our head from being a kid, that we take that role on and we don't see what the other people in the world see. Mm-hmm. We still see ourselves as that kid.
Well, I definitely don't see you as a kid, especially after reading your book, because we have to talk about your book. I got your book and I have received absolutely no warning. I just knew it was about love being worth waiting for. And I said, I have to read this book. But there are some steamy scenes in this book. There are some steamy, oh my God, scenes in this book. Donna, what made you decide to do a book like this?
Oh, my other book has even more steamy scenes, and that's written from a guy's point of view, but that book is not for the faint of heart. That book actually came about initially because I was entering a contest. Somebody had told me about a contest, and there was 1 month to write the book, and I have never done that. I've always been a long-term writer. Mm-hmm. So I was writing in a coffee shop, and then Barnes & Noble had closed. That's why it's dedicated to the people at Barnes. And so I started a different coffee shop, and my husband was in dialysis. So I had to keep myself occupied, and the characters just came. And when I hit the deadline, I looked at the contract, and the contract had a line in it that made me uncomfortable. The contract basically said, if we happen to publish another story that's similar to yours, you can't sue us. So at that moment I was just like, okay, well, guess what? I'm going to keep this. And there's a couple of scenes in there that I wrote. I added in after I was finished in the book, and I tied it into my series. So while it's a standalone, eventually that book will tie into the rest of the series. But it was just something, I'm not shy about writing sex. I'm not shy about writing dark characters. And truthfully, that character, the story kind of started off differently than it did. And I was told that I better not kill a kid off. Because I would get in trouble for that. I would be, you know, strung from my nails for killing off a character. So I didn't do it. So there is no child gets murdered in the story. So no spoilers there. But I don't know. I sat down and the characters came and that was it. So. Wow.
Now, I was reading this book. And one of the things that I will tell you is that I really loved it. I enjoyed it. I loved the creativity in the book. But... You know, there's a but. I was like, this book, let me see. It's like 300 pages nearly. If this was a Sharifa Hardy book, it'd be 2 pages. It would have been like, I love you, you love me, that's it, you know? But you had twist after twist after twist. Just when you think they're going to find each other, they can't find each other. Just when you think they're going to be together, they can't be together. You know, how do you come up with it? How do you create that? Or do you also look at that as part of life where, you know, like you said, I'm so sad to hear that you just lost your husband. It's like, we always think life is going to work out well. And then guess what? Plot twist. It goes in a different direction. How do you continue to do that and keep the creativity going?
Well, I'm going to go to a movie I just watched, which actually sums things up beautifully with the happily ever after thing. Reminisce, I think it's called. And the woman tells the guy, Hugh Jackman, tell me a story with a happily ever after. That ends with a happily ever after. He's like, I couldn't tell you that story at the end. It'd have to be in the middle. And I thought about that for a second. It's like, well, this is true because, you know, John and I had a wonderful marriage, but the happily ever after was there. Now I'm alone. So there is no such thing as a happily ever after. However, that was the one thing I had to do in that book. That book had to have a happily ever after. That was the only constraint in that contest. So it's like, no matter what, how do I keep coming up with these things? I don't know. I get in a zone. It's like my mind just starts going and you know, it just keeps functioning. The birthday scene in that book, I'll be honest, the birthday scene was a scene that was added after. Mm-hmm. And most of the people that have read it that I've talked to, they're like, I would not have known that. I've also gotten chastised about the villain a little bit because people actually like the villain.
I was going to say, I didn't really find him to be, if we're referring to Mason, mm-hmm. I believe that was his name.
Yes, it is.
I didn't really find him to be as much of a villain. I felt that he was...
manipulative.
Well, yes, manipulative is a good word. But the word that I'm really trying for is he was selfish. I think that's just like the simplest word that I could come up with. He got a lot worse over time with drinking and different things like that. But he was clear on what he wanted. And that's what I found to be, you know, again, why my book would have been 2 pages, because he made her an offer, you know, he made her a business deal, an offer. And she could have turned it away. She could have said no, you know what I mean? It's kind of like the whole thing, you know, people talk about the devil. Devil makes you an offer, but he doesn't force you to do these things. So it wasn't like at any point in time, Mason forced her to do all these crazy things.
Mom signed the contract. The contract was already signed.
Yes, but again, Mom and Mason agreed, but she still could have refused. She still could have said no. I mean, but you know what? I mean, not to judge this fictionary character, but I also think it's very symbolic of life in general. I mean, there's always deals and offers that we continue to do, we agree with, we go along with. When someone could look at our life and say, well, why didn't you just say no?
Well, and you got to look at her age. She's 18. At 18 years old, you're going to be looking not so much at yourself, especially back in the 90s. You're not looking at yourself. You're looking at everybody else that this is going to affect. You're going to put yourself last, especially in the situation where she was. She had been taking care of the family, basically, with her residuals mm-hmm. during all of this. So this would be nothing different for her. So, but yeah, I mean, you're right. I could have just wrote to them getting together easily. I could have. But you know, life isn't that way. I mean, I wish it was, but even when I look at my husband and I getting together, we worked down the street and didn't even know each other.
And who would read a 2-page book?
I don't know. Some people write. I could tell you there's a book, there's a like a 25-page book of dinosaur porn on Amazon. Who would read that? I don't know, but there were a few years ago that was a big hit and all the authors were talking because it was high up there in ranking.
Oh wow. No, I don't know. I wouldn't buy it. I don't know. No. But I wanted to, I'm not really into porn or dinosaurs, so it's not something that I would look for. Yeah. But it was just so interesting how every step of the way I just kept thinking that I am a hopeless romantic. I love love. Like, that's, you know, I am a hopeless romantic, that I would have just said, especially when you find someone who says, I love you, and someone who is willing to stand by you and go through all of these different processes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, when you find somebody, and I think that if you want to look back at real love, real relationships, we all sit there and go, well, we're always finding something wrong with the person that we're with. We're always trying to hold them to a higher standard. And the fact of the matter is, that's our expectation. And sometimes we have to let our expectations go.
Right. I mean, but this guy stood by her through mm-hmm. everything, through every step of the way, until, you know, finally, you know, it was kind of like the end of everything. I'm trying to tell this story without
spoiling.
Yes. Well, yes, you can't spoil someone else's book. So, but it was just entertaining to just realize that it was a choice that she was making.
Yeah.
Was there anything you would have done different?
No. No, and honestly, Mason, you will get, you know, the next books that I'm writing, Mason is part of. That's why I say you will find out why Mason became Mason. So, because the other books are set in the 80s. My first book is set, it starts out in 1984, then goes to 97, and then back to 84. But that's just a mind trip, and it's not for everybody. But the book starts out in 1984, the next one, and Mason is mentioned a couple of times. Eventually, you will see why Mason is the way he is. And I know.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, so, but what's interesting is I even like her brother playing a role in this, because you mentioned the family, and it wasn't just the royalties. It was this sense of obligation that she had to everyone, that she wanted to make everyone's life better. You know, so they all made these decisions for her, and she went along with it. So it was just interesting to go backwards in time to see how everyone got there. One of my favorite stories I read in high school, my favorite series that I just loved, was Flowers in the Attic. I don't know if you read
that, but I
loved it, because to date is probably the only series where I've seen that I've watched Flowers in the Attic, and you go, well, how do these people get so messed up? And then the next one, they show you the lives of their parents, and they keep going back in time to show how each family member got this messed up. And even though they did messed up things to their children, at some point, because you found out about their early years, you can kind of like, okay, well, I can almost understand how you got this messed up, because this is how your parents were. This is how your childhood is. So it makes it very interesting that you're doing the same thing and going back in time, so we can kind of empathize with Mason. So I have to read that. I have to figure out, okay, how did Mason get this way?
Well, and I'm going to say, you know, my days with the Dark Muse, it has a twist ending, but since it's been out for 2 years, you know, basically what happens is the protagonist, or the main guy in the story, Nigel Hartigan, he has a coke problem, and you go through him living this life in a coma. He is in a coma, and you go through living his life, which is really, really bad. And he goes through this tumultuous time, and then he wakes up, and he's in 1984. And the woman that he thought was his wife in his coma, he meets, and that's how the book ends. Yes, I just gave the whole book away, but it's a wild ride. And here's the fact of the matter is, I've been told that when people read it, that it was so dark and it was awful. And he's just an awful, awful man. And there's no way I was going to redeem him. I managed to redeem him. So,
but you know, the fact that you even look for see, that just is a testament to your spirit, to your empathy, your humanness, to even want to redeem some of these dark characters. It just shows that you see and that there is good in everyone. You know, people always talk about all the murders and all the serial killers and all that other thing, but I just always believe that there's something that happened to them along the way. There's something occurred, some action, usually someone that stepped in to take this innocence away and lead them down this dark path. Now, people have been researching this for years, and I tell people this all the time on the show. I am not a doctor. I do not have a degree in anything, you know, because some people say, well, you know what? They were just born this way. They're born that way. And I'm like, okay, usually something happened, or the lack of something happened. You know, maybe they didn't receive enough hugs when they were kids. So I just think it's incredible that you care enough to look past, you know, how dark these people are and find some humanity in them.
Well, that's the thing. When I write, and this is what I've, you know, Worth Waiting For is a romance novel. It's a romantic suspense novel, but I don't write, you know, I'm not going to give you a happily ever after every time you read a book. I tend to want to call my writing realistic fiction, because there's always an element of realism. In fact, I mean, I'll go and investigate cars and cell phones and everything else to give you even more reality. And in Days, the first book, the whole fact of the matter is basically that time that he's out in a coma, that life he lives, that's a template. And my job as a writer is to see if that's going to play out in his reality or not. So that's basically what my Days is. It's a template for, is he really going to screw up this bad with her or not?
Wow, that is so interesting. I've had a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to chat with you, Ms. Donna. Now, we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today.
I would say that, you know, if you ever are feeling like you can't keep going, no, you can. That no matter what, there's somebody out there that cares about you, loves you. Even if you feel socially awkward, it doesn't matter. You matter. And life is important. And, you know, always think that there is a better to moment. While today may be not so perfect, tomorrow could be. And, you know, if you want to read a book, I have several to read, and I offer readings too. But if you ever just need to figure out something, reach out to somebody, me or somebody. And, you know, we're all here. We're all human, and we can all make a difference in each other's lives. So remember humanity. And if you need to find me, you can find me at dmneedham.com. So, and the podcast is at bettertopodcast.com.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Ms. Donna, I want to thank you for being a guest on today's episode of Ask Sharifa Videocast and Podcast. I really appreciate you being here. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. I appreciate your support. But as always, please reach out to our guest. Pick up a copy of her book. She was here today to share her information. So please support her. And if you're interested in being a guest or you want more information, please visit my website at AskSharifa.com. Until next time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day.
Thanks, Sharifa.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Bye.